We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we're going to talk about one of the all-time greats in the game of football, Red Grange. When Grange went out for football here at Illinois, he did so reluctantly. He wanted to play baseball and basketball. He didn't think he had what it took to play football, but his fraternity brothers insisted. They must have seen his gifts. He was a three-time All-American halfback who would go on to help launch professional football for the Chicago Bears. Grange became a national sensation in 1924 in Illinois' game against arch-rival Michigan, running for four touchdowns in the first 12 minutes of the game. What a thrill it was for the thousands who had gathered at Memorial Stadium on what was the stadium's dedication day. Here's how Grange remembers it.
I would say of all the football that I ever had the privilege of playing, that this game was probably more 100% game. That is, every player on that team, all 11 of us, did exactly what you were supposed to do. This was a game where if you were to block this man, you blocked him. If you were to do this, you did it. Everything worked to perfection. That first touchdown I made was on the kickoff, and I didn't even see anyone. There wasn't anybody around me. I mean, the blockers had done their job. Along with blocking and tackling, believe me, the most important part of football is confidence. In the next 12 minutes, I scored three other touchdowns, but I take no credit for it, especially. I did what I was supposed to do. The other 10 fellas did what they were supposed to do. Who got the credit for it? Grange, because he carried the ball, of course. The other 10 fellas that made it possible, no one ever heard of them.
The galloping ghost, Red Grange, in an interview conducted by one of our guests this afternoon, Kemper Peacock. Peacock's interview is the last in-depth video interview Grange granted, and it's the centerpiece of a new documentary by our companion station, WILL-TV. The documentary, Red Grange Remembers, debuts on WILL-TV next Tuesday evening, September 8th, 2009, at 7 o'clock. Red Grange Remembers is produced by Denise LaGrassa and co-produced and hosted by John Paul. They're also with us this afternoon to talk about Red Grange. Listeners, join us with your questions and comments. We look forward to your telephone calls. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Kemper Peacock and Denise LaGrassa join us by phone this afternoon. John Paul is with me in the studio. So to our guests on the phone, Kemper Peacock, Denise LaGrassa, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Celeste.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Kemper Peacock, as we heard in that clip from the interview, Grange was a great storyteller, and he gave you a wonderful interview. But he'd been reluctant to talk to you. Tell us about landing this interview.
Well, I was doing a series for CBS Sports called In Their Own Words, and it was to run during the halftime of football games on Saturday afternoon. CBS was starting its premier year of carrying college football. ABC had had an exclusive contract to do so for quite some time. And they wanted to do something a little bit different, and so I proposed that an interview be conducted and aired during the halftime of an individual who had played for one of the teams that were competing that particular day. And so when it came to an Illinois game, it was fairly obvious that Red Grange was the one person who stood out above all others. So I went, I believe, to the SID at Illinois to try and track Mr. Grange down, and he helped me with his address and his phone number and so forth, and I finally was able to reach him, and he was not at all excited about the prospect of being interviewed. But I persisted and essentially told him, you name the date, the time, the place, and I'll be there. And ultimately he agreed, so I and my crew showed up at a place, I believe, called Indian Lakes, Florida, about noon one day in, I believe it was September of 1982. And we went to his home, a very modest home, very pleasant home. I believe his wife's name was Margaret. We set the camera up in his backyard and started the camera rolling, and as I've said many times, and I could even hear it in the clip you just aired, he just had an intensity that was really quite distinctive.
Yeah.
And, it was a pleasure.
Yeah. What other thoughts go through your mind all these years later about that day? Were you a little wary in terms of, this guy doesn't really want to talk to me? Is he gonna give me what I need?
Well, I never knew. It was a funny experience. I mean, I truly loved doing the interviewing, and what I found was that so often the people that you thought were going to be outstanding interviews were somewhat disappointing, and the ones that you thought were the opposite. Other ones were the opposite. And in his case, he was a professional, and I think he recognized that once he committed to doing the interview, he was prepared to put himself into it. Mm-hmm. And of course, the irony of it all was that these pieces ran at most 90 seconds, and I think his interview and most of the interviews I did were probably 2 or 2.5 hours in length, but they were freewheeling, so you never quite knew where they were going to end up. I had a marvelous researcher by the name of Dick Snyder, who I'd worked with at ABC and elsewhere at the NCAA, and he was the one that gave me this whole list of questions to ask and made it look as though I knew what I was talking about. I'm not sure that was the case.
I think that's, that's what's interesting about Celeste, about Kemper, is I found most interesting about Kemper is that he's not a sports expert at all, but it was really the story that came through, and that's what he really gave you, Kemper. You know, he really took the time with Kemper to share so much. I mean, when he would ask one question, the question went, you know, the answer went on and on and on and on, right, Kemper?
Well, that's quite true, and I was thinking, listening to the clip that you aired, how often do you hear an athlete that can speak that well? There were no you knows, there was no repetitions. Everything he said was very clear and precise and to the point, which doesn't happen all too often.
Yeah. It's because he was educated at the University of Illinois.
You're absolutely right, Jeff.
I think the other thing, Kemper, that I think viewers who get a chance to see this will be amazed at is he looks right into the camera, right into your eyes as a viewer, and I think to some degree you get to see the soul of Harold Red Grange a little bit through this interview. And that's why it's important and why it's critical and a vital interview. If you're an Illini fan, if you love local history, here's a chance to see inside the soul of someone who truly was the first superstar of football.
Hmm. Well, it was my intent with all the interviews to make this as personal as could be. And the structure of the pieces was that there was not a narrator. So I had to link the statements the individual made to the next statement. Of course, there were various historic photos that were placed in the interview. But I would sit practically on top of the lens, and because I wanted that eye contact. I felt that was critical. And I have to say, I don't see it too often today, 27 years later. But and I think he appreciated that. It was not, and the other thing that I would say is that I learned over the years that even though you have the best research and a long list of questions you want to ask, it's essential, absolutely essential, that the interviewer listen to the answer that the individual is giving. And you have to be prepared to forget about your list of questions, because there are times when an individual will say, well, something to the effect, that meant a great deal to me. Well, that's not an answer. What is the answer is, why did it mean a great deal? And so he was very responsive in that regard. And one of the things that happened is that I think he sensed that I was listening to his answers. And he felt very strongly about everything he said. And so it was indeed a great personal and professional pleasure to interview him.
Denise, tell us about discovering this interview.
Well, I was working on, and feel free to jump in there, Kemper. I was working on Memorial Stadium True Illini Spirit last year, and coming to a dead end in the project because the film wouldn't be complete without an interview from Red Grange. While there was a few interviews out there, and very few really, that were, you know, that would go directly to his experience at University of Illinois and playing there. And those that were out there were, you know, those we've seen before. So there was that repetition. And I, you know, as a producer, I'm not really interested in that. I'm looking for something, you know, a hidden treasure. And those that were out there that I thought, well, I'm probably going to have to go with this particular interview. Well, you know, you're working on a shoestring budget, basically, and that would absorb most of the cost of our budget. So I was, as I always try to do, finding something that would be, you know, at a low cost to the station. And so that was a real trick. And it was very difficult at the end to really find something. And I was waiting and waiting on Tribune Company for an interview and wasn't getting anywhere. And I was, I know John Paul was really sort of, you know, feeling, you know, sort of nervous about it and sort of giving up the fact that we were going to find anything. One day I called a gentleman at ESPN just on a whim, and I was calling every number I could ever think of on the Internet, just digging around. And he led me to Kemper because he was an Illini fan, even though he lived in Florida. And he happened to have his number. And at this point, I was really discouraged, thinking, okay, you know, this producer is not going to, you know, if he's with ESPN, if he's anywhere, any way related to, you know, some sort of high-level organization, he's probably not going to give us something at a low level as a small PBS station. But ironically, I got on the phone with Kemper, and he said, well, what, you want this footage? It's just been sitting here collecting dust in my closet for a long time. And I said, well, tell me about it. And he said, well, it's probably about 2 hours of footage. 2 hours of Red Grange. What? And, yeah, nobody's really seen this, with the exception of the 90 seconds as part of my programming, went on to tell me about it. And he said, I just, you know, was just cleaning up my office apartment in New York, because he was moving all of his Right, Kemper, you were moving your office to...
Well, it was my studio and my days in broadcasting. It appeared to have come to a close. And I'd had this material for 26, 27 years. So, and I always thought it had value, as well as the other individuals that I had conducted interviews with. So I was really quite startled when sitting almost in the same spot that I am right now on this beautiful day here in Westport, Connecticut, and here was Denise looking for this material. And I thought, I can't believe this, because I had done a great deal of work over the years for the NCAA, and I didn't want to throw the material away. Mm-hmm. I thought it had value, but sadly, all too often, what happened yesterday is like yesterday's news. Nobody mm-hmm. wants it. So when Denise called and was looking for this material, I had to laugh. And I said, well, I'll do what I can to see if I can find out through some friends at the NCAA. And Denise and the NCAA took it from there. And I frankly was quite overjoyed at the thought that this material would possibly see the light of day.
And I think I shared with you, Kemper, just before that, it was, I said I executed the Hail Mary pass at that point.
Everything's football, isn't it?
Burning the bees.
Yeah. Well, John Paul, when you first set your eyes on this footage, what did you think?
You know, it's a gem of an interview. I think the interview that Denise and I had run across previous to this one was one done by WGN-TV in probably the 1970s when Jack Brickhouse was there and in his heydays doing Cubs broadcasts. And Jack had interviewed Red probably somewhere in the Chicagoland area, and it was a half-hour interview called 12 Minutes to Immortality. As Denise said, it would have been okay, but it kind of had been seen before. So it really, I think, opened my eyes and was like, wow, it'd be great to have this. And then Denise and Kemper were able to work together and make this happen. So again, I think the thing that's amazing to me is that there's so much material here and a chance for you to really get to know this guy who is just an amazing, not only athlete, but person.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Three guests are with us this afternoon to talk about the new WILL-TV documentary, Red Grange Remembers. It debuts on WILL-TV next Tuesday evening, September 8th at 2009 at 7 o'clock. And Red Grange Remembers is produced by Denise LaGrassa and co-produced and hosted by John Paul. They're with us this afternoon to talk about Red Grange. At the center of this documentary, Red Grange Remembers, is an interview conducted by another of our guests this afternoon, Kemper Peacock. His interview is the last in-depth interview Red Grange granted, and it's the centerpiece of this documentary. It was conducted the video interview conducted in 1982. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Let's take a call now from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
I was just tuned into your program, and I caught the part where your guest was talking about how, you know, he had all these material, was kind of hoping that someone at some point would care. And I was wondering if he had ever considered donating it to the university archives, since, you know, we're interested. I mean, I work at the archives. That's why I caught my ear, because it's something that I know, I mean, we care about a lot, and we are always more than willing to go to the effort to preserve this material for future generations to learn about what people were doing back then. I'll hang up and turn on my radio now. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Well, I think I've made it clear on numerous occasions to Denise, keep this stuff. Don't send it back to anybody, because I recognize that the folks in Champaign and everyone associated with the university have great appreciation for it. And so I think it's found its proper home. I have no financial interest in it, and I just am pleased that it's now seeing the light of day.
Hmm. I do have to say that Kemper did interview, besides Red, quite a few stellar athletes from colleges across the country, including that celebrity who was in Hill Street Blues, right?
Yes, I did, yes.
Ed Marinaro from Cornell.
Ed Marinaro, yes. Well, there were, I believe, 20 individuals in all in the series. And one of the fascinating things about it, and it certainly happened with Red, is that when I talked to the individual about the series and who else I was interviewing, so often they knew one another. And in particular...
Oh, the Bronco Nagurski and...
Right. And they would say things like, well, tell Bronco I can still beat him at 50 yards or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a marvelous link that enabled me, when I contacted individuals, to say, well, Red sends his regards, or Ed does, or whoever it might have been. So it, yes, I mean, it was a fascinating experience for me personally and professionally.
He talks about a number of athletic standouts of the time in the documentary, including Nagurski. For those who aren't big football fans and fans of football history, what should we know about Nagurski?
Well, you now know that I'm not a great authority on sports, even though I worked in the sporting field for a great many decades. Nagurski is in the list of greats.
He was a two-time All-American, wasn't he?
Yes.
From the University of Minnesota.
That's correct. Oh. And he went on to play professional football. But he, along with a few others, Ernie Nevers and such, were individuals that are highly regarded as having been the most noteworthy players in the game. And I wanted to have Bronco Nagurski on the show. He was one of the individuals I contacted. And it was rather sad in the sense that I did reach him. He, at that time, was living up, I believe, in International Falls, Minnesota. And he was pleased to hear from Red Grange because they had mutual respect for one another. And that was genuine, I'm quite certain. But he said, Kemper, I'd really like to help you, but I'm no longer the man that I once was. And he was in a wheelchair at that point. He said, I'll give you an audio interview, but I regret I just would not feel comfortable being on camera. And I was really quite touched by that. But and I shared that with Red, and he understood that. But, yes, it was quite a collection of individuals. They ranged, their college careers ranged from the 20s up to the early 70s with Ed Marinaro. But they all knew of one another in one form or another, in many cases personally.
Yeah. Bronco was a powerful player, wasn't he? He's a powerful defensive. He was really up there with Buckus. He was supposed to be, you know, even more powerful than Buckus.
Well, I think the question that was posed to Red was, who was the greatest football player you ever saw?
Right.
And he said, without question, Bronco.
Yeah. Hmm. Grange also talks about a number of other great athletes in the documentary, in your interview with him, Kemper, including, he told you about Ty Cobb and meeting Ty Cobb. Would you tell that story?
Well, I can't say at this point I actually remember it too well. But it was a different era. I mean, he met Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, and these chaps sort of, you know, were in a very small group with one another, and when they would be in the same town, they would sometimes catch up with one another. But Red's true love was baseball, so it was a natural for him to be excited about meeting Ty Cobb, which he did. I honestly can't recall exactly what he said, but that was a big moment because Ty Cobb was, of course, somewhat older than Red, and he was, along with Babe Ruth, a towering sports figure at that time.
And Kemper, I think, if I remember right from the interview that listeners, of course, and viewers will be able to see on Tuesday night, Red grew up in Wheaton and was an avid White Sox fan.
And
Black Sox, I guess, too, in 1919. But because of that, he became very interested in Ty Cobb. And when he was still in high school or his early days in college. He was given the invitation to meet with Ty Cobb, who was like, this would be great. And he met with Cobb, according to the story that he told you. He met with Cobb in Chicago while Detroit was there playing the Sox. They went out to eat, and I think he said the conversation lasted 4 hours. Ty wanted to talk about football, and Red wanted to talk about baseball. And throughout the whole thing, Red was amazed that he was meeting this superstar of baseball.
That sounds right.
You know, I think the other thing to bring up here is the university is about to hoist into place a statue of Red Grange outside the stadium, Kemper, of the same side of the stadium that we walked into the day you and I did the interview.
Right.
It's about 30 foot tall. It will be, I think, in my opinion, as an Illini fan, a real focal point for the university. And it's sculpted by a university alumnus. So that goes up next week. In fact, it may be hoisted into place the day the documentary premieres.
Hmm. Well, I think that'll be a quite special event for the university and everyone attending.
Yeah. I, at this point, I would like to just throw this out for speculation. What kind of baseball player would Red Grange have been? He really wanted to play baseball.
Fantastic baseball player.
I think you have to look at Red in more recent times. You know, for some of us, I think history begins the day we're born, and we don't appreciate what happens prior to the time we arrive. And that's what this interview allows you to do, is see the early days of Illinois football, of pro football, and learn about one of the icons in that era. At the same time, though, I wonder if we really do appreciate what happened back in that area. Kemper, I think the one thing that many people may have a hard time understanding is that Red was truly a superstar in the same sense that Tiger Woods is today, or that Michael Jordan was just a few years ago, right?
I agree. Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. He, I mean, there wasn't much that he didn't do. I mean, he was in films. He was in broadcasting.
He endorsed products.
He, there was a Red Grange candy bar.
Cereal. He was on the Wheaties
meatloaf
box.
Too. Yeah. Wasn't there an endorsement for meatloaf, I think?
I'm sure there was.
But I think the thing that impressed me most in studying Grange, reading about Grange, researching Grange, was in those early days of the 20s, people wanted to just touch him and see him because they'd heard so much. And you got to remember, this is before television. So it was radio or the newspapers that played up this galloping ghost image and the quickness, fast ability of him to go down the field, and everybody goes, I've got to go see this, which brought thousands and thousands of people to pro football.
There was an economic boom going on, too, so it was the first time people were actually driving to games, away games, home games, and they had the radio. It was a time when sports, all of sports, was really rising in this country. It was the first time. And he also raised that level then throughout his life. The bar was raised then for professional football later. You know, so when and he was the first player, actually the first athlete ever, to command receipts of the gate, you know, a share of the gate. There had been other athletes who would have a manager, as Grange did with C.C. Pyle, but he was the first one who, you know, it depended on the attendance. That was also, he also was, his financial contract would include a share of the gate. And from that point on, I believe others would follow.
Kemper, I think the other thing he told you, if you'll remember this part, that I think for us is impressive is this man was the friend of the president at one point. He gets to meet the president at least. He's a friend of Babe Ruth's, of Jack Dempsey, and he was impressed, as impressed with them as they were with him.
Oh, that's quite true. He was, it seemed to me, a very humble man. But at the same time, he just exuded confidence and power. The one thing I would like to add is that I recall vividly, and as I said earlier in my interview, there was never really any structure to the thing. And as I was finishing the interview, it just occurred to me to say, Red, did you enjoy playing football? And he said something to the effect, well, that's the first time anyone ever asked me that. And whereupon he replied, my true love was baseball.
So do we know whether he would have been any good? That's a big question.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But he went on, and I remember having goosebumps about it, because he talked about how as a boy he would go to, I believe it was Comiskey Park, and watch the Black Sox. And then he named each player and their position on the Black Sox team. I mean, it was a phenomenal moment for me. I knew I could never use it in the piece because it went on for quite some time, but it was, I thought, a poignant moment, and I felt that he'd shared something with me that he'd never really shared with anyone else, and I was very touched.
I think that's true, Kemper. You could really hear that, and that was such an important part for me in putting this film together. That was such an important part for me to figure out how to do it and how to do it and introduce it in the right way, you know. And I was so lucky to find in Chicago Mary Brace of Brace Photography, had that picture that you see. Well, that's actually a hand-drawn picture of all of those players from 1919. Mm-hmm. And it's well done by our editor, Hans Waters. He does a really nice job of introducing each one of those players that he mentions. And it is a really touching moment in the film, I think.
Kemper, there's a point in the interview where I suspect you asked Red Grange how he came to his nicknames, Red and the Galloping Ghost. And I want to play this excerpt because it's a good story. I also want to play it because it says something about the man's work ethic. So maybe we could listen to that now.
Red, I was always called from high school days. They didn't want to call me, anybody on the football team did not want to call me Harold, so my hair was a little bit red. I was nicknamed Red. Of course, the Galloping Ghost, which I received when I was playing at the University of Illinois, and that was given to me by a reporter in Chicago, a sports reporter named Warren Brown. He wrote an article for the paper in Chicago, and he alluded to Grange as the Galloping Ghost. And I think that stuck with me down through the years. Then my summer occupation, when I would be home at Wheaton, Illinois, I was an iceman. Now, you youngsters, of course, don't know what an iceman is because you have electric refrigerators today. But the iceman used to haul ice, and we carried anywhere from 25 to 100 pounds to put in your refrigerator. And that was my summer job. 2 days after I left school in June, I would be on the ice wagon and work through June, July, and August up until football started again in the fall. I don't think that I worked any harder than anybody else in the summertime, but I worked 6 days a week and about 10 to 12 hours each day. And believe me, we got paid, too. You'd be surprised. Finally got her pay up to $37.50 a week, and that was unheard of in those days.
And that, the Galloping Ghost, Red Grange, in an interview conducted by one of our guests this afternoon, Kemper Peacock. His interview with Red Grange is the last in-depth video interview Grange granted, and it is the centerpiece of a new documentary produced by our companion station, WILL-TV. Red Grange Remembers is produced by Denise LaGrassa and co-produced and hosted by John Paul. They're also with us this afternoon.
The associate producer, actually, John Paul.
Okay. And my name is Celeste Quinn, and I invite listeners to join us with questions and comments this afternoon. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Anybody want to talk about that clip that we heard and the stories that it contains?
You know, a lot of people don't know that Red actually had a first name. I think his first name was Red. Because of those nicknames. And the Galloping Ghost and the Wheaton Iceman. You know, everybody sometime in their life has a nickname attached to them. And the more famous you become, the more somebody gives you a nickname, whether it's Tiger or MJ or whatever it might be. You look at the newspaper headlines from the 20s and 30s, when Red was active in football, and it never used Harold. It always used Red.
It's interesting you should say that, John, because when I started this series and was proposing it to CBS, the first game of the series featured North Carolina, and I can't remember who North Carolina was playing, but North Carolina had a player by the name of Charlie Choo Choo Justice. And I said, that's the person we have to get, if for no other reason than that wonderful nickname. And I'll never forget in his interview, when I asked him about the nickname, he said, I urge every player to get a nickname. He said, I have lived with that nickname all my days because they said I was like a freight train running across the field. And there was never any question about who Charlie Justice was. He was just Choo Choo. So a nickname is something that really can almost replace the name of the individual.
Kemper, one thing you said, I think, in the documentary that people will see, was when you did these interviews, especially the one with Red, you tried not to ask the same old question they'd been asked over and over and over again. Why did you do that?
Well, because I didn't want to have a show that looked like everybody else's show. And I was more interested in the individual, in a way, than I was in the athletic side of the individual. And I often thought, in the many, many interviews that I've done over the years, that in a strange way, I was frequently having a more intimate conversation with the individual than he had probably had with his wife or anyone in his family or in quite some time. Because the real thrust of it was trying to find out how they felt, what it meant to them, and things of that nature, not the fact that they had run endless yards or won endless games. And I found it quite interesting because all these individuals had been interviewed over the years and to some degree frequently, and Red was certainly no exception, and I think it was one of the reasons that he was reluctant to do it, is that they were bored with the questions they'd been asked. And to some degree, many of these individuals, I think, felt, I'm tired of being thought of as just an athlete. I'm a human being, and I have views on a lot of things. Red certainly had views on a lot of things. So that was my focus. And as I said earlier, the important thing I feel in an interview, and it doesn't happen very often, not that I was great, but you have to listen to the answer the individual gives, because there can be a jewel in the short answer that can be missed. And so that's how the interviews went. And I had interviews where I learned things that, of course, couldn't ever be on the air. But it was important to establish that rapport with the individual. And that's why I'm very proud of these interviews, because I think that without exception, the individuals come across as more than just an athlete.
Denise, for you, spending so much time with Kemper Peacock's interview, what comes across most strongly to you about Grange's character in these stories that he tells? I'm just so wowed by that story of being an Iceman in Wheaton, Illinois.
Yes, Celeste, that was pretty interesting, actually. I was just down visiting my parents, and I played the film. And my father, who's, you know, probably about 76 now, he remembers. He recalls the days when he was a child. He remembers the Iceman. And I thought that his work ethic was incredible. He reminded me so much, Celeste, of some of those the interviews that I conducted with the Central Illinois World War II stories. I mean, this is, you know, just a man of integrity, a man of, I think that his athleticism was just an extension of who he was. He was just a humble hero. That's the thing that comes to mind with Red Grange. And he was surrounded by people who, you know, had all of the distractions of, you know, and the lures of the probably the sports entertainment business of that time. And he just didn't strike me as that sort of person. I mean, he certainly, I'm sure, enjoyed his fame. But, you know, in the end, and then towards the end of his life, and I think throughout, he just remained the same, it seems.
Yeah.
You agree, Kemper?
Oh, I think that's very true. And it reminds me of a comment he made at one point where he talked about what the fame didn't really have that great appeal for him. He enjoyed it and so forth. And, you know, he wasn't a party man, but then he caught himself. He said, well, I have to be careful because I met my wife as a stewardess on a flight to I believe it was Omaha, Nebraska. And it was essentially his saying that, you know, he had picked up this lady.
A stewardess.
Yeah, a stewardess.
On a flight.
Yeah, on a flight. And it was also interesting because here they were all these years later, and it was quite apparent that they had great affection and love for one another, and that was certainly appealing.
Yeah, they're married some 40 years or more.
Oh, yes, easily. But he had a sense of humor. He very definitely had a sense of humor, and he was a very his humility was quite genuine, I think.
Hmm. He worked as a student in the summer as an iceman, and his wages were, he thought that they were quite handsome, but they would be nothing in comparison to the offer that was made to him to come play for the Chicago Bears. Who wants to tell that story, John or Denise?
Well, I mean, he is approached, and I think for people in the Champaign-Urbana area, the locale of where he is first approached is historic, too. Red would go to movies at the then brand new Virginia Theater, and the manager of that theater, C.C. Pyle, sends out a note to one of his ushers to go pull Red out of the audience and call him into the office, and Red goes in there to meet Pyle, who he's like, why am I meeting the manager? And Pyle tells him, hey, kid, how'd you like to make $100,000? And Red's response is, you know, what do I have to do? I don't do things like that. And he goes, no, no, all you have to do is play football. Well, yeah, Red says, I'd be interested in that. And this becomes the beginning of a 19-game barnstorming tour with these fledgling Chicago Bears that takes him all over America. That brings, what was it, Yankee Stadium, something like 60,000 to 80,000 people to a game for what then had been described, Kemper, I think you described it as a club sport, right?
Yes, it was. Yes, absolutely. You know, he and Mr. Hallis put professional football on the map.
And yet he didn't claim he didn't claim that he was the reason football succeeded. Do you remember why he said the NFL became what it is today?
So he claims that television is the reason that football is the success that it is today, right?
Yeah,
Kemper?
yes.
And I think
and
that
he worked in television. And interestingly, I was talking with a chap I'd worked with some years ago at ABC, and I enjoyed this, Denise, because this chap was telling me that, oh, yes, Red worked with Lindsay Nelson. And I didn't know that, and I didn't get into it, but there are a couple of stills in the show, the completed show of Red with, I believe that's Lindsay Nelson.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So there you are. One other thing that probably a lot of folks don't know is that Red was born in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Not Illinois.
Born in Pennsylvania and moves to Illinois when he's five after his mother passes away. His dad moves, he and his brother Garland, to Wheaton. I'm not quite sure why they moved to Wheaton, but his dad eventually becomes a cop in Wheaton and police chief. And at one point, I read somewhere along the way that when Red was in high school, his dad gave him a quarter every time he scored a touchdown.
That's wonderful.
He was born in 1903.
And he had, I had read someplace that he actually had some sort of heart problem when he was 8 or 9 years old. And he was, you know, at that point was probably not going to ever be able to play any sport.
He sure made some hearts beat fast.
That's right. I love that part in the film where it's like he's talking about the Michigan game and how he was out there running. He's like, I didn't even see anyone, you know. It's like the man could run so fast. That was his gift, you know.
I think the other thing that, and I have to compliment Denise and Kemper for this, but one of the things viewers will see when they watch this is some historic photographs and film that really takes you to those early days at Memorial Stadium, to those early days of professional football. What was the movie that was out recently, Leatherheads, about football in that era? And indeed, you see just how muddy and dirty and how little protection these people wore and how you can understand how they ended up with concussions and blood all over themselves by the end of the game.
Those cleats that Grange, I understand, I haven't seen the statue, but there was a gentleman at the Rotary the other day who said the cleats that are on the statue, Jean-Paul, are just really huge cleats, big cleats. And, you know, today they don't look like that, you know. And I would guess that they could really do some damage.
And those helmets were nothing.
Yeah. Speaking about the stills in the show, it reminds me, when I would visit the individual, and I would always ask if they had any memorabilia, photographs or whatever from their days as an athlete. And in Red's case, he shrugged off my request and just said, oh, I threw all that stuff away years ago. So, well, fine, if that's the way it is. I was truly touched at the end of the interview. His wife, Margaret, I believe, had made some lemonade, and we're sitting around and having cookies, and I really felt it had been a successful interview. And I have to say, I like the man. I like the man a lot. And he then approached me with a milk carton and said, this might be of interest to you, things in here. And I had no idea what it was. And he said, I received this from the University of Illinois. He said, apparently an alum had been a great fan of mine, and when he passed, his wife had contacted the university and said that her husband had saved just about every clipping in which he was mentioned over the years. And she was reluctant to throw it away, so she approached the university and said, perhaps you can pass this on to Red. And they did. And he'd had it in a closet, whatever. But it just said so much to me that he felt comfortable and was willing to reveal that this even existed after this interview. And, of course, we did record a lot of the stills that he had there. And it was amazing. I mean, they're everything from candy bar wrappers to posters that would appear in front of movie theaters about films that he was appearing in. And it was a treasure trove.
Yeah. We have to wrap up here, and I want to give the last word to Harold Red Grange. Here he speaks of the game itself, the game of football.
Just go out for football. Get the knocks, get the bumps, get the pats on the back, get the kicks once in a while. I think it does everybody good. You win without going around blowing up about it and bragging about it, and you can lose without crying about it. And you say, well, let's start all over again.
And there you have it, the galloping ghost, Red Grange, in an interview conducted in 1982 by one of our guests this afternoon, Kemper Peacock. Kemper, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
A pleasure.
Peacock's interview is the last in-depth video interview with Grange, and it is now the centerpiece of a new documentary by our companion station, WILL-TV. The documentary, Red Grange Remembers, debuts on WILL-TV next Tuesday evening, September 8th at 7 o'clock. Red Grange Remembers is produced by Denise LaGrassa. Denise, thank you.
Thank you, Celeste.
The associate producer and host of Red Grange Remembers is John Paul. John, thank you.
Thanks, Celeste.
And my thanks this afternoon to one of my colleagues here at Radio, Mike Pritchard, for the help putting together the audio clips that we heard this afternoon.